It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
I ask no favor for my sex. All I ask of our brethren is that they take their feet off our necks.
We welcome today Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
She's become such an icon.
Would you mind signing this copy?
I am 84 years old and everyone wants to take a picture with me.
Notorious RBG.
Yeah.
When you come right down to it, the closest thing to a superhero I know.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg changed the way the world is for American women.
I became a lawyer when women were not wanted by the legal profession.
Thousands of state and federal laws discriminated on the basis of gender. She was following in the footsteps of the battle for racial equality. She wanted equal protection for women.
Men and women are persons of equal dignity, and they should count equally before the law.
She captured for the male members of the court what it was like to be a second-class citizen.
The point is that the discriminatory line almost inevitably hurts women.
I did see myself as kind of a kindergarten teacher in those days because the judges didn't think sex discrimination existed.
I have had the great good fortune to share life with a partner truly extraordinary for his generation.
He was the first boy I ever knew who cared that I had a brain.
She is a center of power on and off the court.
Every time Justice Ginsburg wrote a dissent, the internet would explode.
I came up with a couple slogans. You can't spell truth without Ruth.
I surely would not be in this room today without the determined efforts of men and women who kept dreams alive.
All right, that was the trailer for the movie The Notorious RBG, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who was lionized in that movie and other movies as well. I saw the movie, loved it, enjoyed it so much. Ruth Bader Ginsburg was fascinating. She was a beautiful woman in her youth, if you've seen pictures of her. A handsome husband, the love of her life. And so it always makes me wonder how she became so embittered about women's rights. Why she felt that some man had his foot on her neck. You know, what in the world made her feel that way? You know, Phyllis Schlafly grew up at the same time, and Phyllis never talked that way. They were pretty much the same age. Phyllis was a little older. Phyllis got her law degree, went to Harvard when there were no women there. Phyllis was never embittered. Phyllis never complained about being held back by men. And don't you know that Phyllis probably did experience, you know, opposition because it was not culturally accepted for women to be as smart or accomplish what she and Ruth Bader Ginsburg accomplished. But there's a huge contrast between Phyllis Schlafly and Ruth Bader Ginsburg in terms of their attitudes. So Ruth Bader Ginsburg made her life's work, you know, the so-called rights of women. And I want to talk about that just for a minute because I want to put it in perspective. I can appreciate, like Michael Jackson, let's just put it this way. Michael Jackson was a great talent, and personally, I loved his music. I used to just love Michael Jackson's music. The things that he wrote, the way he danced, it was stunning. He was so talented. But that's not the same thing as thinking Michael Jackson was a king, a god, someone to be praised other than for his music. Ruth Bader Ginsburg is now presented as a champion, an icon. People were crying at the Supreme Court. She is the champion of women. She's done all of these wonderful things. And I have to say, there are millions of little girl babies who have been aborted who do not feel that Ruth Bader Ginsburg is their champion. Let's just put it very clearly. Our Ruth was rabidly pro-choice. She was one of the persons that fought hard against the ban on partial birth abortion. It's just one of the many things she did. She was at the ACLU for a number of years. It always stunned me that when she was confirmed, I think she was confirmed by, I want to say 94, 96 of the senators. None of the Republican so-called conservatives had any problem with Ruth Bader Ginsburg's history. Ruth did a lot of things. And so as you see people like weeping on the steps of the Supreme Court, look, people have every right to their views and opinions, and I'm glad it was a peaceful gathering. But they are responding to the propaganda, which has been foisted on us, that she was some kind of a champion for women. That's not the champion I want for my girls or my grandchildren, do you? Someone who says that men have the foot on the necks of women, I've never felt that way. I have never felt that way, and I came up during a time when, of course, you know, men... it was a man's world, no question about it. It just never bothered me or hindered me. And that's why I've never been, I've never embraced the women's liberation movement. That's why I really am, in many cases, and this is going to offend you, but I will say it because it's true. I am repulsed by women's issues. I am sick of women. Many times I'm just sick of women. Women this, women that, women, first woman this. I don't care. I want people of all genders to be people of character. And those are the ones I support. And I feel the same way about color, as you well know. We've talked about that. But I just, that women, 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 women's this, women's that, women. And it seems to me, the irony of it is, women have more abilities and privileges and rights and opportunities. In fact, they kind of rule the world right now than they've ever had, and they're still complaining about their rights. Why aren't they celebrating? Why wasn't Ruth celebrating? I just don't understand that. It's always got to be a complaint, always. This is the way grievances go. It has their grievances on race, their grievances on, you know, how I was the, my mother loved my sister more than she loved me. I mean, those are, that never goes away. It just grinds, and people are not willing to give that up. And I think Ruth Bader Ginsburg was a cheerleader for that. I'm not a fan of that. Plus, she did other things that I'm not a fan of, and I'm going to talk about a couple of them right now. You will see, if you look at it online, that, the accusation has been made that Ruth Bader Ginsburg supported the lowering the age of consent for sexual activity to 12. And you'll see all over the, they're going overtime this morning. I looked, you know, just a few minutes ago online about the fact check. This is not true. This is not true. This is not true. Well, can I just tell you something? Because I know about this. Hillary Clinton. Jocelyn Elders, the former Surgeon General, they all were in favor of lowering the age of sexual consent to 12. I know this. I started a book on it that nearly got published. There was a whole move to do that. It's still there, but, you know, it's not been front center because it is an international effort. Hillary Clinton pushed it in the Children's Rights at the UN, I can't remember the exact name of the bill or the proposition, UN Convention on Children's Rights, something like that. Hillary was all about that, so with Ruth Bader Ginsburg. In fact, one of her, the way she writes it, this is part of a piece that she, I don't know if it's a law case because this is an excerpt, it's page 521. The age of consent for sexual acts must be lowered to 12 years old. And let me just say, I was on television a number of years ago with Jocelyn Elders, the former Surgeon General, and we were debating a book called Harmful to Minors, which was all about this. Honestly, I can't remember the name of the author, but Jocelyn Elders wrote the foreword to the book. That's why she was the guest on this. And the whole premise of the book was that it was harmful to minors. Oh, not in the way you think. Oh, no, not that sex with small young children is harmful. No, that was not the premise of the book. The premise of the book was it's harmful to kids not to have the right to be sexual at the age of 12. That was what was harmful to minors. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg was part of that whole crew with Hillary Clinton, with Jocelyn Elders and the rest of them. So I'm just saying she is not a champion. She's charming. She was beautiful. She's brilliant. but she did tremendous damage, and millions of babies have been killed because of her championing the rights of abortion. So that's the truth about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And now we're seeing, of course, you have to know that pedophilia is the next horizon on the sexual left, on the LGBT movement. You know, transgender rights went down very quickly for them, much more quickly than they ever thought. Way back when this first started, the activists in the lesbian, gay movement did not think that people would ever really accept transgenderism, and they tried to distance themselves from that movement. But lo and behold, once they achieved gay marriage, here came transgenderism, and now they've added T to their list, LGBT, because transgenderism has been mainstreamed, and they've got behind them and championed them. And the next thing, the next horizon, and this is not new, it's been in the works for a couple of decades here, is pedophilia. And if you don't believe me on that, we'll talk about this at greater length on another day. But let me just say that out in California, Gavin Newsom has just signed a law, you probably have heard this, to reduce penalties for LGBT sex with minors. It is becoming mainstream. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg played her part in that. This whole thing of mainstreaming the right to have sex from the time you're 12. And maybe they thought earlier, I don't know, but they wrote 12. That was their number. That was the thing that they thought was fine. And you just have to understand how really dark and odious a lot of this stuff is. And so Ruth died, you know, Friday night. It was a real shock. Nobody's happy that she died. I doubt, you know, she was Jewish. My understanding is she left the Jewish faith. And so I don't know where she thought she was going to spend eternity. According to her granddaughter, the last thing she said was that she did not want She wanted the next president to replace her on the Supreme Court. You are dying, gasping for air. You know that you're facing something. And the last thing you say, if this is true, according to her granddaughter, it is that you don't want this president to replace your seat. You want the next president to do it. See, isn't that odd? It isn't odd, I guess, because, you know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg was a political activist. She was very Supreme Court justices, in fact, judges all over the place. Once you become a judge, I think I've told you this, I have a very good friend as a judge in a very big court. He's the chief. And he said one of the hardest things for him was to give up his political speech because he was very conservative politically, and he had to just zip it. He could not talk about candidates or his positions publicly anymore. That's part of the job. FBI agents can't do that either, except they did, didn't they? But they're not supposed to do that either. But Ruth Bader Ginsburg was very political. She was a political Supreme Court justice. She was the epitome of the activist judge. And so because of that, she caused, she was the leader of course, the liberal wing of the Supreme Court. They respected her. Her opinions were very well written. She was a fierce, you know, a force to be reckoned with, no doubt about it. But Ruth Bader Ginsburg was not, she did not hide her opinions about political things. She criticized President Trump. No other Supreme Court justice had ever done quite that. John Roberts might be coming close now. But it's not protocol. It's not acceptable. It's not part of the role of justice to become political. You are at least to give the appearance of not being political, because think about this. The Supreme Court is the final arbiter of all things that affect us as a country. And if there's a person who's, you know, got a, you know, the big Make America Great Again hat on, as they've got their robe on while they're deciding a case on the elections, well, that wouldn't be good, would it? Well, Ruth Bader came close to that. She didn't wear the hat, but she was very frank about her political views. And that was, I think she got away with it because, after all, she was the notorious RBG. So there's a lot to say now about where we stand with this and, you know, where the various Republican senators stand, what Joe Biden has talked about, the implications, what's going to happen, what the president has said. We're going to try to get into as much of that as we can. Mark Levin was on over the weekend on Fox, and he knocked it out of the ballpark. And I may come back with what he had to say because it's so good, everyone should hear it. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
What would it be like if every person knew that they were created in the image of God?
After 2 years in the making, American Family Studios proudly presents In His Image, delighting in God's plan for gender and sexuality.
There are only two sexes, male or female. If you're conceived with a Y chromosome, you will develop into a male.
In His Image is a documentary featuring life-changing testimonies of former LGBT individuals.
In my most formative years of development of sexuality, I went through a brutal time of sexual distortion, molestation.
Visit inhisimage.movie to register for a free sneak preview.
Well, everybody, welcome to this unboxing video as we unbox my hormone blockers.
In His Image from American Family Studios is coming soon. Visit inhisimage.movie.
You're made in the image of God.
God is our living hope. Help us spread the word.
My name is Sandra. I live in McKinney, Texas. 4 years ago, my ignorance was so unbelievable that I voted for Hillary Clinton. I didn't like Trump's character. I didn't know the truth about her or the Democratic Party. By God's grace, a friend recommended I listen to American Family Radio. I now am shocked at the ignorance of people around me who don't know the truth. I tell them, please listen to American Family Radio to hear the truth. What I have heard on your radio program is true. Ignorance will cost you your freedom.
Regardless of who is president, God is still king, and He is our living hope. Help us spread that truth during Share-a-thon, October 13th through 15th. And thanks for partnering with listener-supported American Family Radio.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. I need you to do something right now, folks. Text #250 with the keyword baby. We are in a crisis point in American history, and there is growing concern that the nation's abortion rate is about to explode. So I need your help right now to save the life of an unborn child. And that's why I'm partnering with Preborn, an organization equipping pregnancy centers with ultrasound machines. 80% of women who have an ultrasound save their child. So get on your phone right now. Text #250 with the keyword baby. Text #250 with the keyword baby. What a strange time to live in America, where the land of the free is not so free. For years, our civil liberties have been under assault from a militant army of secularists, leftists, and anarchists, waging a fierce war on the First and Second Amendments. I warn people in my book, Culture Jihad, that we were on the verge of losing cherished values, and my fears have been proven true. 62% of Americans say they are now afraid to share their political beliefs. That's according to a new study from Cato. 77% of conservatives say they censor themselves, afraid their political opinions might offend people, afraid they might lose their job or be publicly shamed by the cancel culture mob. In other words, conservative Americans are being bullied into silence. That's not just un-American, that's unconstitutional. Be sure to listen to my national radio show noon to 3 Eastern, or you can download the free podcast at toddstarnes.com.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
What is the president going to do? He's going to nominate somebody to the Supreme Court who he believes will be faithful to the Constitution. Since when is that controversial? The president wants to nominate people who are faithful to the Constitution, who will follow the Constitution, who will read the wording, try and discern what the framers of the Constitution and the ratifiers meant, and try and apply it. So that has become now radical for the Democrat Party. They call them right-wingers and regressive and so forth. So now embracing and following our magnificent Constitution, which the Democrats hate, which the left hates, which their surrogates hate, that now is considered some kind of extreme right-wing kind of thing. And if we don't get to replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg with a likewise former ACLU or whatever radical justice, then we're going to burn the system down. The American people, this is up to us. Are we going to stand up for our Constitution? Are we going to stand up for our courts? Are we going to protect this system where we have men and women today, and I'll say it, and one hole after another overseas defending this system when they carry the flag in the war, when they believe they're defending the Constitution and the rule of law? We have a party in this country, a fifth column, that is undermining our government, undermining our system. They embrace a group called Black Lives Matter that has as its mission
the destruction of the United States. They embrace Antifa by not criticizing it by name, a Marxist anarchist organization that is attacking cops with lasers and Molotov cocktails. This is the modern day Democrat Party. The radicals of the 1960s now run that party. It not only needs to be defeated, it needs to be crushed, or we are going to lose our precious Constitution, our precious liberty, and our founding principles. Look, they want to take over the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. They're telling us this. They want to destroy the Senate. They are telling us this. They're in the midst of destroying our electoral system today as I speak. They're not only telling us this, they're acting on it. America better wake up, and it better wake up fast.
All right, that was Mark Levin, and in an interview with Fox and Friends over the weekend, we're going to put the whole thing on a Facebook page because, it's worth listening to the entire thing. I'm going to play more of it in just a second, but I want you to hear it and be able to share it, okay? So we'll put that on our Facebook page. So where are we? Ruth passed away Friday night. It was shocking. My husband and I were at dinner celebrating our birthdays, actually, and it was... I don't know why it was shocking. I mean, she was at the age where, you know, we knew any time it might happen, but the timing is pretty amazing. And so the question is, of course, with 44, 43 days left till the election, what should President Trump do? And that's what everyone has jumped on. Oh, you know, the left says, he can't do this. He cannot. It's not fair. It's not right. He can't replace it. You know, we're close to the election. He should wait till the election and let the new president make the appointment and blah, blah, blah. That's what Joe Biden's saying. And that's what everyone's saying. That's on the left, Chuck Schumer, too, making threats. And I'll play some of them for you in just a second. But let me point out that regardless of what anybody said at any time, constitutionally, as soon as there is a vacancy, the president is required by the Constitution to appoint a nominee, and the Senate is required to give advice and consent. When they say it's not fair, what are they talking about? Think about it. Supreme Court justices, you know, sit in their seats and rule over us 20, 30 decades. They're there for decades. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, I'm not sure how long she's been, since the 90s, I think, and so you figure it out. It's been at least a couple of decades. And before that, we have others that just, you know, died at 99 on the bench because it's a lifetime appointment. So if a duly elected president, Joe Biden is elected and he appoints, you know, the person that he wants and they're confirmed. Well, the Joe Biden will not be a president very long. If he's president at all, that's another issue altogether. But let's say he is for 4 years. That term is very short compared to how long a Supreme Court justice serves. So for right now, the United States is, the president is Donald Trump, and he's the one that was elected. So the people elected him, and according to the Constitution, he is to appoint, if there's a vacancy on the court, he's to make an appointment. Other than political reasons, why in the world would you, why constitutionally would you wait? Why is it unfair that a conservative president gets to appoint a nominee instead of waiting and letting the liberal president appoint the nominee? There's no basis for that other than just some arbitrary, it's not fair. It isn't, there's nothing, look, as I understand it, something like 22 or 23 of our presidents have done the very same thing because they've had to. There have been sudden deaths, and they've had to make appointments. And so this is not unusual. It's actually very normal because the justices serve until their senior years, and we've known for a while that several of them, you know, are seniors for sure. And it's just the law of averages. People die. They don't live forever. And so what's at stake here? Well, a lot of things are at stake. I think Ted Cruz probably put it best, and we probably should take a second to play the clip where Ted kind of spells out what's at stake here. This is clip 4.
You know, I mentioned a minute ago the book I have, One Vote Away, that's coming out in a couple of weeks. I have an entire chapter devoted to how you should make Supreme Court nominations. And I think what you should look for is a proven record. Where Republicans have gotten this wrong is where we rolled the dice. On the Democratic side, Democrats bat almost 1,000. Almost every Democratic nominee votes exactly as the Democrats want. On the Republican side, we maybe bat 500. A full half of Republican nominees end up galloping to the left and undermining the Constitution. Here's how you tell the difference. You look for a proven record of, has this individual stood up for the Constitution, defended free speech, defended religious liberty, defended the Second Amendment, and have they suffered the slings and arrows? Has the press criticized them? Has the press attacked them? And have they stood strong? If you look at the justices who stayed faithful to their oath, there are people like Antonin Scalia, there are people like Justice Thomas, people like Sam Alito, people like my old boss, Chief Justice William Rehnquist. Every one of them followed that pattern. That's what I've urged the president to nominate. And, you know, I will say one final observation. When I was clerking for Chief Justice Rehnquist, he obviously worked every day with Justice Ginsburg, and I will say he admired what a careful lawyer she was. Consistently, of the lawyers on the left, of the judges on the left, Chief Justice Rehnquist was always most willing to give an important opinion to Justice Ginsburg because she wrote narrow, careful opinions. That's important, but it's also important what the justices are doing. And I believe the American people want constitutionalists. We're one vote away from seeing our religious liberty rights stripped away, from our free speech stripped away, from our Second Amendment stripped away. This election matters, and I think it is the most important issue in 2020, electing presidents and a Senate who will nominate and confirm strong constitutionalists to the court.
All right. That was a great, strong statement by Ted. It wasn't the statement I thought. That was my mistake. But, you know, he's talking about who gets chosen. And we're going to get to that because I want you to know who we think the president's going to choose or is likely to choose. And Ted is laying out, you know, what we are looking for. Yes, we're looking for courage. We've been stung enough. We were stung by Neil Gorsuch on that decision on transgenders, you know, working in funeral homes. It's just ridiculous that he's opened the gate to making it impossible for employees to have any rights at all about who they hire when it comes to transgenderism. And that was a huge sting. And that was he's been a good conservative vote on other things, but not on that. Terrible. And I have to tell you that when he was under nomination, we had reasons to think that might be a problem. I'm just telling you, down in the weeds, but no one really paid attention. And so that's why we have to pay attention to this next nominee, which is a whole other soapbox to get on, which I probably will likely get on shortly. But the point I wanted Ted to make in a different clip was that we are entering into this very dangerous litigation season. We know that the Democrats are targeting our election process. We know that there are, I would say, that I think I read 150 lawsuits already about what's happening, whether it be the method of, you know, whether you have to show ID to, you know, get a ballot, whether you can just do mass mailings of ballots, whether you can, you know, the dates on the polls, the time at which the ballot must be in. I think the Supreme Court in Pennsylvania just decided that those mail-in ballots could be 3 days late. That's no big deal. They can come in 3 days. Why 3 days? Why 3 days? Why not a week? Why not 10 days? Well, why not 2 weeks? Why not 30 days? But constitutionally, we are supposed to cast our ballot on the date specified. But the Democrats, and it's a very liberal court in Pennsylvania, have decided that they'll let those ballots come in. They can be counted 3 days later, and they don't even have to have a postmark on them. But see, that's just one case. You know that's going to go to the Supreme Court. There are so many others that are going to the Supreme Court over this election issue. And we also know, as I've told you, the Democrats have hired, they're spending millions of dollars on hiring attorneys all over the country to challenge elections everywhere. Their whole idea, they haven't really hidden it very well, is to lock everything up in the court so that we will not know on election night who really won, and we may not know forever because they'd like, or at least as long until they can manipulate it to a victory. They talk about the blue veil or something like that, or the red veil, that President Trump will win on election day, but then the litigation will begin, and you know, when the veil lifts, it'll be Joe Biden. They're actually talking about that. They've got it all planned out, and they're going to do it through the courts. So all this stuff cannot go to an eight-person Supreme Court. An eight-person Supreme Court has the potential, the tremendous potential, of completely being locked up, unable to make a decision. And if they are unable to make a decision, that means that whatever the lower court decided, that's going to be the decision. This is not a time to have eight people on the court. That is a reason alone to move full speed ahead to appoint and to go through the process of getting another justice in there, because we're going to have chaos, and we need a Supreme Court in place with nine people. So, and it's just too bad. It's too bad for the Democrats that President Trump is still president. That's just the way it is. Certainly, Barack Obama got to nominate, what, Sotomayor and Elena Kagan and whoever else. And that was, you know, lucky for them. Just the luck of the draw, the happenstance of being a liberal, able to appoint liberal justices, and they did it. Now Donald Trump is president, and he gets to appoint who he wants to appoint. Now, you may be wondering what's happening with the senators. I'll tell you off the top of my head as best I can. Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski have said that they are opposed to filling this seat before the election because, you know, it's not fair. Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski are both pro-choice Republicans. Susan is in a tight race in Maine, and so she says she's not going to cooperate with us. We don't know about Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney is the one Republican senator who voted to impeach President Trump. And I'm sorry I'm laughing, but, you know, he's just been, let's just say, a faithless Republican senator. So we don't know what he's going to do. I don't think the things that he said have been very neutral. We have no idea. Maybe he'll do what John McCain did on Obamacare and go down to the Senate floor and act like he's going to vote in favor of the nominee, then stick his thumb down because, you know, that's probably what he'd like to do. I don't trust him not to do that. But they can only lose, I think there are 53 Republicans. They can, let's put it this way. If 100% of the senators vote, then the nominee needs at least 51 votes. They need the majority. But if some of these senators, like Susan Collins, should say, I object, but I'm just not going to vote, that changes all the calculations. The nominee needs to have the majority of the senators voting, not necessarily the majority of the Senate. So keep that in mind. You know, it's just like you need a calculator. I think the reason the Senate and the House is such a mess because they can't do math. They are not accountants. They don't understand economics. Look at our national debt, and you'd understand that. And so anyway, that's one thing to factor in. Cory Gardner is in a tough race in Colorado, and we're not quite sure which way he's going to go. Tom Tillis of North Carolina, also in a tough race, who's saying now he will support moving ahead and nominating someone, and he'll support the nominee. Martha McSally, Arizona, also in a tough race, saying the same thing. Two other people that are kind of still out is Lamar Alexander and Pat Roberts. We don't know what they're going to do because they have been sort of faithless themselves in their votes. We've got a lot of really bad Republican senators. Did you know that? Have I ever mentioned that? I believe I have. And so maybe we need to do something about that. What do you think? Well, Mark Levin weighed in on this, and this is going to take us over the break, you guys, but let's hold just for a second because Mark weighed in his appearance with Fox and Friends over the weekend about these senators, and he addressed them, and I thought it was great. Let's listen to clip 7.
Well, it's a very strange thing, this Democrat Party. First of all, they hate the Constitution because they spent the last several months pulling down statues of the founders and saying that the Constitution was adopted by slaveholders. Then they wave it around to justify their destruction of the Constitution. Let's be very, very clear. Let me read you a quote. That's their job. There's nothing in the Constitution that says the president stops being president in his last year. 8 is not a good number for a collegial body that sometimes disagrees. That was Ruth Bader Ginsburg in 2016. But this seat doesn't belong to Ruth Bader Ginsburg. It doesn't belong to anybody. It's in the Constitution, and the American people and the president has a say. Now, under our constitutional system, as Willis said and you both have said, the president makes a nomination. Now, what the Democrats want to do is sabotage this entire process. There's an excellent piece in National Review, Dan McLaughlin. Here's what he says. 29 times in American history, you've heard this because they're all reading the same column, there has been an open Supreme Court vacancy in a presidential election or a lame duck session before the next presidential inauguration. Please listen, America. This is important. The president made a nomination in all 29 cases.
George Washington did it 3 times. John Adams did it. Thomas Jefferson did it. Abraham Lincoln did it. Ulysses S. Grant did it. Franklin Roosevelt did it. Dwight Eisenhower did it. Barack Obama, of course, did it. 22 of the 44 men to hold the office face this situation, now 23. All 22 made the decision to set up a nomination, send it up, whether or not they had the votes in the Senate. So in every single instance in a situation like this, a president has made a nomination. Why? Because it's compelled by the Constitution. So when I listen to Susan Collins and Romney and Murkowski and the other Republicans who say this would be political, this would be unfair, they are failing to uphold their oath to the Constitution of the United States. We don't take an oath to the Democrat Party. We don't take an oath to Chuck Schumer. We didn't take an oath to Ruth Bader Ginsburg. God bless her, one of the most left-wing political active justices in American history, which is why the left is freaking out. Also, the American people understand this. The New York Post has a poll out. Most Americans, regardless of whether they are Republican or Democrat, believe the Senate should move forward to confirmation hearings for a Supreme Court justice this year. It's a Marquette University Law School poll. 67% of respondents believe confirmation should proceed in 2020, while just 32% say no. That was conducted September 8 to September 15, just days before the passing of Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
All right, so that's just a little excerpt, another one of Mark Levin on the Fox and Friends over the weekend. We're going to put the entire exchange on our Facebook page because I really would like for you to hear it. Now, people are saying, well, look, how can we get this? It's only, what, 43 more days, something like that, before the election. So how can that happen? Well, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, yes, she was confirmed 42 days after she was nominated. Justice O'Connor was confirmed 33 days. Justice Stevens was confirmed in 16 days after his nomination. It's all very possible. Of course, there will be lots of obstructions, and if the Republicans don't cooperate, some of the senators, it could cause a problem, but it can be done. And I think that the president is intent on doing it. And the reason why I think he should do it is because we cannot give the left more time to riot and plan mischief at the Supreme Court at the hearing. I'll say more about that in a second. Sandy Rios in the morning, AFR Talk.
You can discipline your child in a God-centered, grace-based way. On the next Focus on the Family, you'll learn how to convey love to your child in the midst of their misbehavior, how to become a calmer parent, and how to see the positive attributes of bad behavior. That's next time on Focus on the Family with Jim Daly.
Focus on the Family is heard each weekday morning at 5 o'clock Central on American Family Radio.
Rioters and looters are destroying cities in the name of racial justice. I'd like to tell them there's a better way through Jesus, the Prince of Peace. Jesus can turn hatred into love. He can make enemies become brothers. And Jesus can replace bitterness with forgiveness. Violence won't fix what's broken in America, and politicians don't know what to do. If we humble ourselves and turn to God, our nation can be a place of peace, safety, and justice for all. I'm Pastor John Miller. Visit me at churchontherock.org.
You shall not covet your neighbor's house or anything that's your neighbor's. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez said, an economic system that allows billionaires to exist is immoral. Someone may want to let the former bartender turned congresswoman know that the top 1% of wage earners pay nearly 50% of all federal taxes. The top 10% of wage earners pay nearly 70% of all federal taxes, and the top 20% of wage earners pay about 85% of all federal taxes. That money funds things like our national welfare programs. Don't let them entice you to harbor disdain for the wealthy. Socialists bank on covetousness to gain support for their regressive policies.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. We're all aware of the tragedy of teenage suicide and want to prevent it in any way possible. A 2012 study from Sweden indicates that there is a strong correlation between parental separation or divorce and suicidal ideation, even when the breakup of the family happens to children from ages 0 to 4. Here's what the authors say. Parental separation or divorce in childhood is significantly associated with ever having had suicidal thoughts or having attempted suicide. Maybe children are not as resilient as we want to think. I've written the Boy to Man book for fathers of 12-year-old boys to help their boys grow up to be men who will commit themselves to their wives and stay committed for life. You can order your copy today at afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. In the modern history of the United States, there's never been a presidential election like this one. One candidate for the presidency has hardly been seen for months. He's held few public events. Those he has attended have typically been highly scripted and strictly constrained. His off-the-cuff comments are often unsettling, but generally uncriticized by a media that is, with very few exceptions, fawningly supportive. The most extraordinary development in this unprecedented campaign, however, is the fact that the running mate on the Democratic ticket actually referred to the presidency on offer as the Harris administration. In the wake of that presumably inadvertent and Freudian slip, though, the Democratic candidate for president's teleprompter actually had him mention the Harris-Biden administration. It remains to be seen what the voters will make of all of this and whether unprecedented electoral fraud will make it irrelevant. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Some have mentioned the possibility, if they try to push through a nominee in a lame duck session, that you and the House could move to impeach President Trump or Attorney General Barr as a way of stalling and preventing the Senate from acting on this nomination.
Well, we have our options. We have arrows in our quiver that I'm not about to discuss right now.
Okay, so that's excuse me. I wonder if Nancy Pelosi has allergies. Sorry, they always they come in the morning, and they surprise me with my little choking. But so Nancy Pelosi is telling us she's got plans, and we know that there are others that have plans too. Let me just read to you some of the plans that people are proposing. Let's see. Furious Democrats are considering total war. Profound changes to two branches of government and even adding stars to the flag if Republicans jam through a Supreme Court nominee, then lose control of the Senate. This is from Axios. Adding Supreme Court justices, eliminating the Senate's 60-vote threshold to end filibusters and statehood for D.C. and Puerto Rico. If he holds a vote in 2020, we pack the court in 2021, Representative Joe Kennedy of Massachusetts tweeted. So I'll just say before I go on with this, I really don't want to waste too much time with this. They're already threatening that. Do you really think in a heartbeat that if Joe Biden and Kamala Harris win, that they won't do everything they can to make sure that there is never, ever a Republican president again, ever, 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 that they will annex the D.C. and Puerto Rico and whatever else they can do to make sure that they have the electoral votes, that they swing the Senate as hard as they can, that they pack the court, that they do away with the legislative filibuster? They will, so that the Democratic Senate and Congress can just go wild. And they will go wild. So why in the world would we allow them to threaten us? But we are listening to their threats. AOC, the de facto, 4-year-old, 26 maybe now, I don't. Head of the Democratic Party was with Chuck Schumer over the weekend, and this is what she said, clip 13.
So let's leave it all on the field. But if Mitch McConnell is not going to honor RBG's final wish, we will. We will. And we have to. All right?
So Ruth Bader Ginsburg, on her deathbed, if she said, she wished all of America would turn blue, should America turn blue because that's her death wish? I mean, this whole business of people's death wishes It's kind of like, to me, a superstition. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, as Mark clearly said earlier, Mark Levin, she doesn't own that seat. It belongs to the American people. She served her time, and she's gone. And so now it is up to us via the Constitution. That's why our Constitution is so fantastic and deserves to be protected. We have a constitutional process to follow, and we need to follow it. Now, it's just interesting to me, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, that was another thing. She did not like the Constitution. She felt the Constitution should be replaced. I wish I had those quotes. Maybe somebody will produce a document that has all the stuff that she has said, at least the key things like that. Yeah, she thought it was something that, you know, was she did not like the Constitution. You have to know that. She was a Supreme Court justice who did not respect or like the Constitution. So, but she's the notorious RBG, so, you know. And millions of women, she's been a champion for them, except those that were aborted because of her championing them, or maybe not so much championing them. But that's the reality. That is the reality. The other is not reality. So I'm thinking that I could talk all day about the Supreme Court, and we will. We'll be talking about it a lot. You know that we will. I'll talk to you about the nominees, but maybe we'll do that tomorrow because I think it'd be kind of interesting to change the subject for a second. What do you think? Over the weekend, the president was rallying in Wisconsin, and some supporters were asked, where is this? Oh, yeah, some supporters were asked what they thought about what was happening in the country. This is clip 16. Let's listen.
What are your top issues for this election? The defunding the police.
Security for our country. Law and order.
Definitely the economy.
Did you vote for Trump in 2016?
Yes.
Are you worried about Trump winning in Wisconsin this time?
No. No. Not when I see our fellow Wisconsinites here.
Well, I think Trump's going to win by a landslide. It's going to be huge.
A lot of people.
And they come up to me and they whisper in my ear, I'm with you. I just can't say it.
So the silent vote is a real thing in Wisconsin.
Oh, absolutely.
I think he's going to definitely win Wisconsin now, especially after the Kenosha thing. I think that actually boosted him.
How much do you think Kenosha is weighing on people's minds in November in Wisconsin?
A lot. A lot. Because he saved that city from being another Portland.
Trump has all the armies back. He has the police's back, and that's what we need in this country. We can't defund the police. If we defund the police, who are you going to call?
How do you think he's handling COVID?
I think he's doing a really good job because who knows how to handle a situation like this. We've never dealt with something like this before.
Should schools open?
Absolutely.
100% yes.
100%. Our kids need to be in school.
What do you say to people who think the rallies are irresponsible because of COVID?
I'm a physician. I completely disagree.
I think it's a personal choice. People wouldn't be here if they didn't want to.
I think if people are out rioting, I think they should be allowed
to come to a rally.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so that was a potpourri of people attending the Trump rally in Wisconsin over the weekend. I found it interesting. I actually made myself watch Bill Gates yesterday on Fox News Sunday because I've heard little excerpts from Bill, and he's been legendary from his founding of Microsoft and his billions of dollars and his wife and their foundation, and they're notorious. Notorious. They could make a notorious Bill Gates movie along with notorious RBG. His love of abortion at all times for any reason. He and his wife have poured so much money into making that possible. And he's working on health in the world. He and his wife fancy that they can eradicate illness. That's one of their goals. Good luck with that, by the way. But I just thought I would listen to him last night and just see, you know, what he was like. And the thing that struck me was just, I don't understand this phenomena, but I find that a lot of people who are wildly wealthy are not, there's something missing. They are not necessarily smart. You know, they are maybe smart with money, but they're not necessarily smart in other ways. He said last night, he actually is saying that President Trump's travel ban from China, when the Wuhan virus broke out there and we saw those terrible videos, the president instituted a travel ban. It was very controversial. Bill Gates said last night that actually made it worse. That made the death rate in America worse. I mean, this is the brilliant Bill Gates. So I don't have time to expand on his reasons, but they didn't make any sense at all. If they did, I would tell you. But in regard to the rally in Wisconsin, both President Trump and Joe Biden are out there in Hermantown, Minnesota. people are upset. I guess they're worried about the lukewarm reception that President Biden received in Minnesota, and they think it bodes well for President Trump. So he didn't do so well, meaning Biden in Minnesota. The president's going to be, I think, in Minnesota today, and Biden in Wisconsin. I think they're flipping a little bit. That's my understanding. Also, just some other random stories. Speaking of Minnesota, two campaign team members for Republican Lacey Johnson, who is challenging Representative Ilhan Omar, were shot Monday afternoon in Minneapolis, one fatally. Do you know about this? Do you know, anybody know about this? This is the person challenging Ilhan Omar, Lacey Johnson, and two campaign team members were shot. This is last Monday, so it would have been a week ago today. Minneapolis Public Radio reports that one 17-year-old and another team member were shot after being approached on foot. CBS 4 reports that the two were standing outside Super USA convenience store at the time and that a gunman or gunmen fled the scene before they could be apprehended. The 17-year-old succumbed to his wounds and the other campaign team member was hospitalized with non-life-threatening injuries. The update, CBS News in Minneapolis say that the suspect sought in connection with the shooting death is under arrest. He was arrested last Thursday morning. So we'll hear more about that. But maybe we will, and maybe we won't. But that should have been a big story. Then in the non-political sphere, I thought it was interesting. You know, this whole business of churches being able to worship is a very big deal. Nancy Pelosi, I'm not sure we have time to play that clip. We really don't. Why don't we start it, though? Clip 17, and then I want to add to this is what Nancy Pelosi had to say when she's asked about opening up the ability for people to worship in California. Let's listen.
You had mentioned that churches, you are Catholic, and the Archbishop of San Francisco recently wrote an op-ed in the Washington Post where he says that government is denying people the right to worship, and it's high time San Francisco let people go back to church again with proper precautions. He's saying that the sacraments can't be received through Zoom or Skype. Your opinion about that, and should churches in San Francisco be allowed to reopen with precautions?
Well, I have been to church in San Francisco recently, and I did receive communion. Just so you know what it was, though, we had to sign up, and they only had two places left, so fortunately I got in under the wire to go. And when we got there, the church maybe holds 250 people.
Okay, I'm going to interrupt her because she goes on to talk about how they, you know, obeyed the social distancing guides. And the thing that jumped out at you is that she was able to get on the list and go to church. She forgot to make that part, you know, emphasize the other. While other people cannot go to church in California, she was able to go. And no, not to worry. They observe social distancing guides. So you can see how bizarre it has gotten. But there is a counter to that. By the way, John MacArthur is still fighting in his church. God bless John MacArthur and all of you pastors who are taking a stand right now. And I want to share something with you that really moved me, that came in my inbox over the weekend. This is an article by Sean, his last name I can't remember. Sean, he's the worship leader who was leading worship out in Portland and Seattle. I played some of the stuff and talked to you about him probably a month ago. And so he's talking about something is happening in America. And he talked about, you know, all the bad things happening in the cities. But all across America, Christians are rising up. In recent weeks, thousands upon thousands have gathered and marched to assert their God-given freedoms. I've stood before them armed with only a copy of the Bible and a simple guitar. People have asked me why we're holding these worship protests across the country. And the answer is simple. God is moving, and our nation needs it now more than ever in my lifetime. Then he goes on to talk about people coming to Christ in these, and so they're happening all over. They're going to be happening across in the White House. They're probably already happening, and I just haven't seen it in the headlines. There is a prayer march this Saturday led by Franklin Graham starting at the Lincoln Memorial. There will be a return led by Jonathan Kahn in the mall this weekend prayer. And listen, if you're near D.C., you should come and join us. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.